I remember my grandma reading the Harlequin romance novels. You remember those? And I know you talked about how that's where you started your love for all of this, was reading romance novels yourselves. Talk about how you know, you progressed into writing and this historical fiction and drama.
You know, there's sort of two parts to that answer. The first part is that I just started writing because I love reading. And I can't even remember the moment that prompted me to start writing my first historical romance novel, which is the ended up being the one I got published, Splendid. And I started it the summer between my junior and senior year of college. And I think I did about four chapters and then told myself I was going to write during my senior year. And of course I didn't. And then I worked on it afterward. But there's another part to that story, which is that when I was about 12 or 13, I was spending the summer in Southern California with my dad. My parents are divorced. And I was reading these, they're called Sweet Dreams. It's basically Harlequin romances for teenagers. It wasn't the Sweet Valley High. That was something a little different. But I was reading these Sweet Dreams romances and I loved them. And my dad was sort of looking at it thinking, you know, she could probably be reading something a little bit more improving or whatever. But he's you know, certainly not the type of person who would ever tell me I can't read something. So he kind of said, all right, well, what are you getting out of this? And I said, well, I'm reading for entertainment. He said, well, that's good. That's good. That's important. But I think you should also be reading for, you know, educational purposes as well. And I said, okay, vocabulary words. And so he said, okay, can you point to a word in this book that you didn't already know? And I could not. So while there's a much to recommend these books, a robust vocabulary was not one of them. And so then, you know, and he's basically saying to me at this point, look, if you can't come up with one thing about these books that's in addition to just reading for pleasure, you're going to have to read something else too. And he's like holding War and Peace or something. And I mean, because that's what my dad reads, right, for fun. So then I had to think very quickly. And I said, well, I'm going to write one. So it's research. And so he said, that's great. In fact, you can have the computer tonight. And, you know, this was the early 80s. We were one of the only houses on the block that had a home computer. And, you know, it was one of those tiny little Osbournes with I'm going to hold up my hands like people can actually see it on radio, but it had like a really small screen that was black with a blinking green cursor, and using this program called WordStar, which hasn't existed for decades. And he sat me down and he went off to watch TV or something. And he comes back 2 hours later and he said to me, he was sure I was going to just walk in after an hour and be like, fine, I give up, you know, hand me the Tolstoy. And instead I'm in there and I'm typing away and I'm two chapters in and I'm just, you know, I was loving it. And, you know, it was a very much a wish fulfillment sort of romance novel. It was how I was kind of hoping my high school career would be, which it was not. But I did eventually finish the book. And I sent it into Sweet Dreams to try to get it published. And I wrote what I still maintain to this day was an excellent cover letter that said, you know, since I'm a teenager, I think you'll find that this is really authentic. And they rejected me so fast, I know they didn't read it. I know enough about New York now to know that nobody gets rejected from the slush pile in under 2 weeks. So I'm just convinced somebody saw that I was a teenager and just said, no way. But yeah, that was the first book I ever wrote. I still have it.
Do you ever think of reworking it and trying to get it published?
You know, the thing is that young adult fiction has really come a long way since then. I mean, it's honestly possibly the most vibrant segment of publishing. And there really isn't any market for what I did. What I did doesn't really exist anymore as a marketable book. So, I mean, I don't even know if I could rework it, but I will say that, you know, if you read it, you can actually absolutely tell it's me. That's the funny. I mean, I write better now. It's more polished, but you can absolutely see my voice in it.
When it comes to Bridgerton, it has just exploded. And I'm wondering what it was like as an author and a creator to watch the momentum grow, especially as it was picked up for television.
Well, so, you know, it happened very slowly and then went nuts. And so the reason I say that is, you know, I actually, between the time that I first got the phone call and the time that it was publicly announced, the deal was 18 months. So I had that whole thing going on for 18 months. And that whole time, I know just enough about Hollywood to know that, you know, most things that get optioned don't get made. And I also know enough to be able to see signs that it actually looked like it was gonna happen. And thinking like, I don't want to get my hopes up, but this seems very promising. So the whole, you know, this is going on the whole way. And then in the time after the announcement to the time it actually dropped, it was kind of this neat little like time for people who felt like they were in on a secret. All the book readers were really excited, but nobody else knew anything about it. So, you know, within my little romance book world, it was big news, but, you know, it was still nothing like it is now. And then it hit and we were all stuck at home in the pandemic and it went nuts. And that was crazy. It was just surreal. You know, every time a late night host would make a joke, I would get texts from every single person I've ever met being like, did you see? Blah, you know, it was crazy.
Is there any difference when you go to events like the one that you're coming to in St. Louis? Is there a difference between your fans who are readers and your fans who have seen the television series?
You know, not among people who come to events. People who come to events are people who are interested and engaged. And if they're not book readers, they usually are maybe interested in becoming a book reader or there with a book reader. So, you know, they're all pretty wonderful. The people, you know, floating around the internet, there can be a bit of a difference. I think, you know, when something is a television show, there's like another level of sort of removal or distance that makes the people involved, whether it be the actors or the initial writer like me or the showrunners, that kind of dehumanizes us in a way. And I think some people who are fans of film media, film and television media, are just sometimes not as nice. but that's I still think that's kind of a small but loud portion of them.
When it comes to writing something and crafting something that is from a particular era, mm-hmm. does that create some of that critique that people want it to be, they want to make sure that it is authentic and, you know, period, and reflects the society of that time?
Yes and no, and which is like the wishy-washiest answer ever. But, you know, I think with romance novels, people want a flavor of it. They don't necessarily want pure authenticity. You know, if I gave them pure authenticity, you know, the Duke, well, first of all, there wouldn't be nearly so many Dukes and Earls running around. They wouldn't all be of marriageable age. They wouldn't all be totally handsome with straight teeth, and half of them would probably have syphilis. So yeah, they definitely don't want the pure, the way it was. But you know, I have made mistakes, and you know, people do call me on them, I mean, I do my best to get, when I am adding in historical details, to get them all right. I will say that when I do make a mistake now, and readers let me know about it, over 90% of the time, it's a mistake I have made against my own universe. So it's not even like I had somebody, you know, in battle at the wrong time. It's like I had somebody married and they shouldn't have been married yet. And they will let me know within hours of the book dropping.
Kind of a continuity issue then?
Absolutely. And I have to take it as a compliment that they are that invested. And usually people are really nice about that. They're always sort of like, and often something like, did you mean to do it this way? No, no, I did not mean to make a mistake, but that's very kind of you to phrase it that way.
Queen Charlotte is your latest work. Tell us a little bit about this, how you launched this project and how it may be a little bit different than some of the things you've done in the past.
So Queen Charlotte actually is quite different in two ways. The first way is that it's not a true romance novel in the way that all the rest of my books are. You know, a romance novel, at least there are a couple things that have to happen. You have to have, your couple has to meet or meet again, and it has to have a happy ending. And how you get from the beginning to the end is wide open, but basically you have to have those two things. And in general, at least the way I do it, it's written from two points of view. And it can either be in the first or third person, but you've got the hero and the heroine, or two heroes, two heroines, but the two main protagonists. And Queen Charlotte actually has four points of view. You've got the queen and the king, but you've also got Agatha. Yeah, we call her young Agatha and behind the scenes, and Brimsley, the queen's servant. And then also it's a bittersweet ending. Which, you know, was really non-negotiable because these are two real people. It's the first time I've written a book where I had two actual real people from history. The other thing that was quite different about it for me was that I was writing from source material. Shonda wrote the scripts for the show, six of them, and then she handed them off to me and I turned them into a novel. So it really was kind of like reverse engineering. You know, usually you have, you know, somebody turning books into a film or TV series, and we had it going the other way. So with Bridgerton and Queen Charlotte, you had books that made a show, that made another show, that made a book. So we're really getting very meta there.
And you're talking about Shonda Rhimes, who is a television creator, producer, author in her own right.
Yes, yes. She's a force.
What's it been like having a partnership like that?
You know, I don't work directly with her on a day-to-day basis, but what it really is just a sense of trust and relief. I mean, like when you've got somebody you're working with who's that smart and that talented, you just don't have to worry that much because you know they're going to do a good job. And so really, it's just a delight. I mean, if you can hand your creation over to somebody that amazing, I mean, I'm happy to do so.
I'm curious from the standpoint of, obviously, as a news person, I cover a lot of maybe political intrigue, modern political intrigue. I'm curious what kind of links or comparisons maybe you have thought of or drawn as you are working on some of these historical pieces and then thinking about things that are happening right now.
Oh boy. We are recording this the day before the election and it's going to be aired after the election, isn't it? So, you know, in all the books I've written, you really have these women who are, they're not necessarily breaking through the boundaries because they're living at a time when the boundaries are really tight. But they are stretching them and they are, you know, removing bricks from walls so that the women who come after them are going to be able to like break down the wall. And so I think that is something we're still seeing today. I think women are still constantly fighting for agency and equality. And, you know, maybe back then, you know, these are women who are, you know, upset about the fact that, you know, once they get married, they no longer own their own property. Well, you know, in Missouri, where I will be traveling to very soon, women don't have the right to make choices over their own reproductive health. And I think it's not so different, you know, this fight. I mean, it's horrifying to me that we have been moving backwards in some states. And, you know, I'm open about my own political beliefs. I have certainly lost some readers over it, although not as many as like you'd think. I mean, because the people who come on in social media and like to make comments against what I'm saying are pretty loud, and often they'll make, you know, 40 comments each. So it looks like there's so many comments, but then you see, you know, the quiet masses just liking it. So I think there are a lot of parallels